always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
Of course, this is not a thumbs up, thumbs down. This is a complicated decision. We just got it here. It's an opinion from Chief Justice John Roberts finding that former presidents are entitled to absolute immunity for official acts, but not for unofficial acts. So what does that translate to? Well, this is something we saw that was sort of signaled in oral argument, because what this means is that the former president cannot be prosecuted for anything that was officially part of his job when he was in office. And that's significant because even his own lawyers conceded during oral argument that not everything that is alleged in this indictment was an official act. So now the question is, what does the special counsel do here?
428 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp show. And Tim, how lucky we are to have a gentleman, a scholar, and a former politician on the show to go over all of this big news. Let's get him on. Former U.S. Senator Jim Talent and chairman of the Reagan Institute.
I'm watching this and just wondering, you know, who's running the show.
This Jim Talent segment is brought to you by Royal Banks of Missouri.
Senator, welcome to the show. Before we talk about this immunity case, I want to pivot to the case last week, which was the Chevron case. And I'm very interested in your views on this because you were in the Congress and or in the House and in the Senate. And I want to get your thoughts on the growing administrative state that Chevron helped grow and your thoughts while you were in the Congress about Chevron and the administrative state's power.
Sure. Well, Chevron is a judge-made, or was, it's now been eliminated by the Supreme Court. It was a judge-made doctrine that federal courts ought to defer to agency interpretations of the statutes they were implementing. And the Supreme Court has been cutting back on it because it's fundamentally at odds with a constitutional scheme. So Congress passes law. The courts authoritatively interpret them, and agencies are not courts, right? So they should not be exercising that kind of power. And the Supreme Court said that. The court said, look, it's the courts are going to interpret these. Now, the agencies can argue for their interpretation before the courts, but they don't get to decide the question themselves. And so I think it was a long time coming. It was the right decision. Chris, I don't know how much practical impact it's going to have because the doctrine has been reduced a lot in the last few years. And I think a lot of the time the courts were just using it as sort of a fig leaf to cover the interpretation they wanted anyway. But it's the right decision. And one of several here at the end of term that the courts handed down that I thought were very thoughtful.
Yeah. Senator, to follow up on that point, when you look at the body of work as a whole that came out of the Supreme Court, there's a couple decisions I know that we're not completely satisfied with, which is on the other hand, blows up the argument that this is a far right wing activist court, as the liberals are all saying, and they're using the things they don't like to give reasons to attack the court. But Senator, as a whole, when you look at the Chevron case, when you look at the immunity case that the court handed down today as to presidential immunity, when you look at the case last week as to the SEC, not the football, baseball, basketball conference, but the Securities and Exchange Commission saying it can't just arbitrarily fine people, that they have to give them due process. Senator, these are things that I think all of us on the right side of the political aisle go, well, yeah, that's common sense. That's what the original meaning of these things should have been. The left, though, Senator, is using every single one of these to say, oh, the court's out of hand. We need to attack it. We need to attack it and pack it. And AOC, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she's using it, Senator, as a reason to file articles of impeachment next week after the current recess is over. I mean, this is what happens when you try to take power away from Democrats and their beloved big government, right?
Yeah, and it's what happens when so many of these commentators and even public officials like Ocasio-Cortez abandon the idea of the rule of law. So, you know, the Constitution was written down for a reason, because the founders wanted it to have a meaning and they wanted the meaning to endure. Same thing with statutes, which means there are interpretations of the Constitution and the statute which are plausible given the text and history, and those, there are those which are not. And it's not the job of the court to write the Constitution or write the laws. It's the job of the court to interpret it. Now, that leaves them plenty of discretion, as you know. And, you know, what I always said, you know, for people who wanted to be judges and they would approach me, you know, to see if I could help them, I always said, look, you know, I want judges to have a consistent jurisprudence and apply it consistently. So, yeah, you can be a strict interpretationist in some things or a liberal interpretation on other things, but you're interpreting it. You're not writing the law. You and I have been legislators. That's something we got to do because we put our names on the ballot. And people could ask us questions or tell us how crazy we are and vote for us or not vote for us. And, you know, others have not done that. So we get to write the law, the courts get to interpret it, and the agencies get to implement under the direction of political officials. That's how a republic is supposed to work.
Mm-hmm. Speaking with Jim Talent, former U.S. Senator and chairman of the Reagan Institute's National Leadership Council. Getting back to today's immunity decision, Senator, Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson said, quote, "The president is now a king above the law." And Sotomayor said, "With fear for our democracy, I dissent." A bit of hyperbole?
Oh, no question. Yeah, I mean, it was of course the president is immune from criminal prosecution for his official acts. If you didn't have that, right, most of the laws that were written by the Congress, the criminal laws, were meant to apply in a context that does not apply to the president. I'll give you an example. You know, there are broad federal laws regarding obstructing agencies or obstructing criminal investigations. So what you could say then is that let's take the Biden administration. They clearly have not been enforcing the border laws, right? So, and I presume at some point Joe Biden told them, well, don't enforce those laws, or something that a vigorous prosecutor could make a case that that's what he did. So this was a policy choice he made. A terrible policy choice. But if we subject presidents to criminal prosecution for that, then when they're trying to make decisions, they're going to be sitting there thinking, okay, if the other party wins the next election, am I going to be put in jail for this? That's what the court was saying today. So for their official acts, they're immune. The court also said their acts are presumed to be official, but not necessarily. And they, you know, they handed down guidelines, and the case is going to go back down, and the district court is going to apply those guidelines in deciding what part of this indictment can go forward. So again, it was the right decision, and I think really the only possible one, if you have a respect for the constitutional regime, which some people don't, right? Mm-hmm. I can tell you, I gave you a lot of instances. Obama, you know, drone striking an American citizen. There's a federal law against extraterritorial murder of an American citizen, but it's not meant to apply to the president who's trying to carry out his national security function. The other thing about it is, remember, presidents or secretaries, their administrations are sued all the time and subject to the courts. Those are civil actions, okay? And all this coming from people who supported and continue to support Biden's forgiveness of student loans, even though it's perfectly obvious that violates the law. I mean, you can't do that. I mean, Nancy Pelosi said that. Obama said that. They don't have the authority to forgive these student loans, and Biden's doing it anyway for political reasons, and all these people are supporting it while they're screaming about democracy.
Mm. Senator, this is the first time we've spoken with you since the debate, if you can call it that, last Thursday. I don't think any of us expected to see what we actually saw, and I think many of us were wondering if we were watching some kind of AI concoction. None of us thought that Joe Biden would be great. Many of us were hoping he would not be quite with it, but we didn't want him to perhaps be as disastrous as he was, because apparently right now, you know, the devil that we know is the one that Trump can possibly, we're still a long way to go, but but can possibly beat versus the devil that we don't. Senator, your reaction of the debate, and what do you think about the civil war that appears to have developed between the liberal intelligentsia at the New York Times, the Atlantic, and other publications and networks versus the elected Democrats who seem to largely be circling the wagons around Joe Biden at this point?
And Senator, Senator, follow to that question, too. Joey reminded us that you were watching that debate with the wine, cheese, and truffles class in Lake Tahoe. So can you tell us about that as well?
Well, now, these are the supporters of the Reagan Institute. Very fine people. Strong Ronald Reagan Republicans. And I enjoyed watching it with them. But I take the point. So, you know, my takeaway from this, and to the extent I was angry watching it, I was angry at the press. And the takeaway is they're the big loser. And I don't mean everybody in the press, but, you know, the legacy media has been telling us, gaslighting us for years now that there's nothing wrong with Joe Biden. And they were lying. I mean, I'll use the term, and I don't use it very often, but they had to be. And we knew they were lying, and they knew we knew. And now they're very upset because they thought they could get away with it through the election, and they can't because of this. This tactic they tried that Trump blew up in their faces. And that's a fun little irony of this. The reason Trump accepted that debate invitation, even though the rules were unfavorable to him, was because he thought the only reason they offered it was because they thought he would insist on negotiating and then they could refuse to negotiate and blame him for not debating. So he accepted it. And then, you know, we got what we got. Just looking at this purely from a political point of view, I would come down with Obama and Clyburn and the others and tell the Democrats, to tell the New York Times, look, we're stuck with him. You're just making it worse with all these editorials. Let's just do the best we can between now and November, because the difficulties with replacing him are immense. And besides this, I don't know how you can replace him with anybody but Kamala Harris. Because if you say if the Democratic Party officially says the president is not competent, then he has to resign. I mean, he's not competent to be a candidate, but he's competent to be president for the next 6 or 7 months. Mm-hmm. And even if he doesn't resign, how do you keep Harris from getting it? Mm-hmm. And obviously they don't want Harris to get, I mean, I guess they don't. So, I mean, I guess if I was being hired, Tim, as a political consultant, and that's all I cared about here, I would probably say, let's just stick it out as long as we can. Plus, which I don't think he's going to go. I mean, his family wants him to stay. There's a lot. Those of us who've done this and or helped others do it, look at this, and I think maybe there's some truth to the fact, and now don't laugh at me, that they over-prepared him. Because I think he went out there trying to remember what they had told him to say. And even for somebody who is sharp, that's a mistake with a debate. I mean, you can try and remember a couple of lines, but you don't want to try and remember a script, because you forget it then. See, he forgot it at the beginning, and then he started panicking. And I think he actually got a little better after about 20 or 25 minutes. When he just decided, well, I'm just going to say what I want to say. It was better after that. The other problem, of course, was the way he looks. I mean, I feel for him on one level, but on another level, this is pretty dangerous with what's going on in the world today.
Speaking with Jim Talent, former U.S. Senator and chairman of the Reagan Institute's National Leadership Council. Senator, I think this is the first time in our 3 years that we have been strictly asking you questions on the domestic side, but I do have a foreign policy question for you. What is going on with these French elections and the surge of the right in Europe? All of the headlines are about the French party, Le Pen, possibly taking over the government. Inform us. What's going on, sir?
Has it been 3 years, guys? I mean, we should have an anniversary celebration or something. Marie Le Pen's party, Renaissance, has won a plurality in the first round of voting for the French legislature. And will certainly end up the biggest party. Whether they're going to have a majority or not, I don't know. And that's very bad for Macron. He called the election a snap election when he didn't have to. which is turning out to be a big mistake for him. And you know, the reason is that so many people in France are angry about all this immigration and what it's doing to French society and the crime that it's causing. So this is called now a right-wing party. Actually, the Le Pen's party on other issues is pretty left-wing. Hmm. But because they want to do something about crime and they don't want unlimited immigration, they're called right-wing. Okay. I think one of the big implications here is for the EU, because after this election is finished, France is going to be working with like Meloni in Italy and Hungary and Holland. And, you know, the EU may find that they actually have to listen to the voters after this, which would be a good thing. But, yeah, this is upsetting the status quo on the continent.
And, Senator, isn't it interesting that Europe appears to be a leading indicator on this issue? Maybe the left in America should wake up and smell the coffee on this issue, too, huh?
Excuse me, Tim. I'm
sorry.
Coughing. I brought back a cold with me from wine and cheese. look, there just isn't any question that in Western societies, Western democracies anyway, there is a disconnect between huge numbers of voters and the people who are at the commanding heights of the culture and politics. Mm-hmm. You're going to see this in Britain. It's going to manifest itself in an enormous victory for Labour, not because people really like Labour, but because they haven't been in power. They're the only alternative. And people are very angry. This is how democracy works. You know, when the voters get angry, you better pay attention. Mm-hmm. And they've been getting more and more angry over time. And these elites, there's no other way to call it. They're just not listening. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's when you hear how they dismiss people, they think people are like hillbillies or know-nothings or something like that. And that's not, I mean, it's wrong. I mean, it's inaccurate, but it's highly disrespectful. Mm-hmm. And it's like Hillary's deplorable comment. I mean, I never would have even thought about attacking a group of voters. You know, and I don't think I mean, Chris, you were, you bodied me. You were my body man. Did you ever hear me say, oh, these Democratic voters are deplorable because they're not voting for me? I mean, I didn't think that, and I wouldn't have said it if I did.
And what that tells me is just Hillary thought she had it wrapped up in the bag, and there's no way anybody would vote for Donald Trump, so I can disparage his voters. And unfortunately, she learned that was the wrong thing to do.
That was the wrong thing to do,
Exactly. Senator Talon, we always love talking with you, and we can't wait to talk with you again next week, because we can almost guarantee there will be a lot of things going on stateside and across the world, and we love picking your brain and getting your insight, sir.
Good, and happy third anniversary.
Thank you, and happy 4th of July, too.
Yeah, same to you guys.
Have a great weekend and holiday, sir. And 4:45 is the current time, and 4:47, 4:48, somewhere around there, we'll have Chris's Corner. We'll talk more about the horrible debate performance of Joe Biden and the aftermath of that. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL, number one for live and local conservative talk.